Greetings! Hello, dear students! Welcome to Business 123, Introduction to Investments. We are so, all of us at Southwestern, happy and honored and grateful that you have chosen Southwestern Community College for your education. And we are going to do our best. Our goal is to make this one of the best classes you have ever taken. Now, it might sound a little over the top, but it is sincere. That is certainly my goal. And my name is Frank Paiano. I am the instructor for this class. And you can call me Frank, but a lot of the students at San Ysidro, where I taught for many years, haven't taught there in a while. They don't feel comfortable calling me Frank, so I said, how about Paco? Because Frank is Francisco, Paco. Okay, they could call me Senior Paco. The fact that you're listening to this and or watching this is very important because the presentations are an integral part of the class. In the syllabus, we talk about the book, but we want you to concentrate on what's in the presentations. Sound good? You ready to get started? You excited? Well, I am. So let's get started. And we start with a perspective. It is a gloomy moment in history. Never has the future seemed so dark and incalculable. The United States is beset with racial, industrial, and commercial chaos drifting we know not where. Of our troubles, no one can see the end. Did you see this last night on Skunk News? I'm sorry, Weasel News. Wolverine. By Fox News! Fox News, right! Where Donald Trump is fighting Megan Bimbo and Shrill O'Reilly, and they're talking about the end of the world because Obama is the Antichrist, soon to be, hey, nothing's new, folks. When do you think this was written? When do you think this was said? Well, when you ask most people, some may say, you know, 9/11. Some may say 1970s because of disco. No. Many people will say the 1930s, 1940s, right. Great Depression, World War II. You know, they were only about 100 years off. It was Harper's Magazine, 1847. Right. Did they have serious problems in 1847? Oh, yeah, country was about to tear itself apart in the Civil War. The Peculiar Institution. What a great name, huh? Don't call it slavery. Call it the Peculiar Institution. Was still raging throughout the southern states. Yeah. And the Industrial Revolution was taking hold. And so did they have serious problems in the 1840s? Yeah, they did. And did we have serious problems in the 2010s, yeah, we do. But so far, equating serious with fatal has been incorrect. In fact, the last 200 years, the last 100 years, the last 20 years have been the most prosperous years in the history of the world. And providing we don't blow ourselves up, the next 20, 30, 40 years should be even better. Yeah, they should. Because around the world, people have realized that, you know, capitalism might just be the worst system, economic system out there, except for all the others. And they want some too. Me some too. I want cell phones, and I want a roof over my head, and I want Danone yogurt, and I want Coca-Cola, and they want the things that we take for granted. So there are hundreds of millions of people leaving poverty and entering the middle class, and that bodes well for investors and for the world as a whole, providing we don't blow ourselves up or a meteorite or a tsunami or disco returning, yes. So I'm optimistic, and I am going to do my best to share that optimism with you. We will look at the serious problems, because there are serious problems, but we will also look at the tremendous opportunities that lie ahead in the global economy. How's that for a advertisement? Slide number two. Let's get started. What I've done here, folks, is the best I can to create what, if I were going to write a book, would be in the first chapter. Now, the book is pretty dry, and in fact, the first chapter is the absolute best chapter in the entire book. But then, what I also like to include is an overview of investments. But they don't put that until chapter three, and they go into far too much detail. Far too much detail than I agree with. And so, I'm going to refer to this as chapter one. But the material that's from chapter one is from The Brief History of Risk and Return, which is very important. The overview of security types, the overview of investment alternatives, that's from chapter three, but I recommend to you not to read it from chapter three. But if you do, read it very not detailed. They get into too much detail. Read it cursorily. Is that a word? I don't know. Read it on a cursory level, on a far back a level. Don't get into too much of the details. And then we will also discuss short-term investments and get them out of the way. They're in the book, but you know, there's not a chapter on short-term investments. So I throw that in here because they're important, but they're not that exciting, and we want to get them out of the way. So that's what's in chapter one, even though it includes a little bit of chapter three and some of my lecture notes I threw in. So if I were going to write a book, which I'm not going to do. Here is Mr. J. Kenfield Morley's quote, and it's just, I mean, this guy had it figured out. He's not the only one, but it's very simple, folks. But it ain't easy, as Mr. Buffett is often one to say. Investing is very simple. In investing money, the amount of interest you want should depend upon whether you want to eat well or sleep well. I wouldn't use the term interest. I would say rewards, investment rewards or investment returns. And why is that? Because interest is just one type of return. It's just one type of investment reward. But that's what we're going to learn, folks. We're going to learn the various types of investments and what can we reasonably expect from them in terms of reward over the long term, and also what can we reasonably expect in the realm of risk. In other words, what can go wrong? Because you cannot separate the two. And anybody who tells you differently, folks, is either deluding themselves or they're trying to delude you, or both. Because there's this eternal struggle between risk and return, risk and reward. And we will go into that in detail in chapter one. But remember that, folks, you have to ask yourself, do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? And it turns out that we can, you know, try to do a little bit of both. There are going to be times when we're not going to sleep so well, but, you know, for the most part, if we invest for the long term, we're going to eat well. Yeah, it's going to work out. Unless the world ends, and then it doesn't matter. Slide number four. We start from the very beginning. Were you worried when you took this class? Oh, I have to be like the people on TV talking about my stocks and my shorts, and I don't understand why I have to wear shorts. Why can't I wear long pants? And margining that is like butter, but it's margarine. No, forget all that stuff. Forget it all, folks. We start from the very beginning. What is an investment? So slide number four. Here's the definition. That's a very good definition. An investment is any vehicle into which resources can be placed with the expectation that it will generate positive income or that its value will be preserved or increased or both. So what they're talking about, folks, is an instrument, a vehicle, something that we can place resources in and we can have a reasonable expectation that we're going to get income from it, money's going to be thrown off from the investment, or that it will at least stay the same or hopefully increase, or both. And so what we're talking about are income returns and capital gains returns. And here's another, and we're going to discuss these, of course, in detail. Here's another definition from a gentleman by the name of Benjamin Graham, and we will refer to him throughout this semester. He was Warren Buffett's teacher. He passed away in 1975, but he wrote the definitive book on investing called The Intelligent Investor. Now, don't go run out and buy that and try to read it right now. Wait till you get somewhat into this class. In fact, it's not the best book to start with. And there's a document out there called Books to Read, and a commentary. So check those out. But here, Mr. Graham says, an investment operation is one which, upon thorough analysis, promises safety of principal and a satisfactory return. Operations not meeting these requirements are speculative. Now, those words he chose very carefully, and we will go through them in detail. Are you an investor or are you a speculator? Which another word for that is a trader. Not T-R-A-I-T-O-R, traitor as in against your country, but trader as in trading stocks and bonds and other types of security, other types of investment securities. And not wanting to own the investment, more likely wanting to rent it. And investment returns and investment rewards come in many different shapes and sizes and flavors. And so what we need you to write down right now is income, the two words, income and capital gains. Because those are the two main ways we reap rewards from investments. Income, another phrase is cash flows. And we get income from interest, from bonds, dividend, from stocks, rent, from real estate. And then the one that people tend to concentrate on, is important, folks, but don't forget the income, is capital gains. We buy it for $10, we sell it for $20, whatever. The price goes up. There is also another word called capital appreciation, which sounds a little bit more fancy, and then there's also capital losses because sometimes investments go down, and the word capital is really just means resources. That's all it means is resources. So you can think of it as money, but capital is an all encompassing term meaning resources. So we're going to look for returns in the form of income, and we're going to look for returns in the form of capital gains. Appreciation. The price goes up. And what we're going to do in the next several slides is take a look at the different characteristics that investments have. So I want you to write these terms down, and there's a study guide out there. I hope you took a look at it and listened to the commentary. And all these terms I'm going to expect you to learn. However you learn them is up to you, using flashcards or outlining or whatever. But you do need to know these because you're going to be the expert. You're going to be the expert for your family and friends, and you can't let them down, right? Right. Slide 5. What are the types of investments? Well, there are three major types of investments. There are others, but these are the three main ones. Securities. And that's a dumb name, in my humble opinion. In fact, we used to call this class Investments and Securities, and students would go, but I'm not an Administration of Justice major. No, not that type of security. A security, when you hear the term security, you can think of it as a financial investment, okay? That'll work. Securities are investments that represent debt or ownership, or the legal right to acquire or sell an ownership interest. What? It's a fancy term for a financial investment. So when you see the word securities, you just think, oh yeah, and some examples of these are stocks, bonds, mutual funds, what we're going to spend much of our time on in this class. The other type, major type, is property. Property, real property. What a silly name, as opposed to imaginary property. Why do they call it real estate? Is it their unreal estate? No. Real means, in legal terms, anything that's attached to the ground. That's where the legal term comes from. And I'm not a lawyer, so go ask a lawyer. And then there are personal properties such as cars and art and collectibles. And we'll spend a little bit of time on these, folks, towards the end of the semester. Sometimes called they're called tangible assets. And then you might have heard the term commodities. It's very important in our society, in our economy, but they can be very risky for the average investor. So we tend to stay away from these things. And then this third one is personal investments. Investing in you. Because these are often the best investments, or at least the ones that reward us tremendously, such as education, training, travel, and college is often the best investment a person will ever make. And why is that? Well, I think you know why. You're bettering yourself as a person and increasing your earning potential over the long term, although it's not a guarantee, and we discuss this in the financial planning and money management class in detail, but it is a life transforming for many people, and for many people it's a very stressful time, but very few people will tell you that they really regret going to college. They regret the cost sometimes. That's why you're at the Southwestern Community College, right? At the community college level. But no, I don't think many people regret the fact that they went to college. They just regret the debt that they have after it. So we're going to concentrate on securities. All right? So let's take a look at slide number 6. Now, we separate investments into either primary or derivative. So these are all, when I do this in the face-to-face class, I put these names, derivative, primary assets, derivative assets, on the board as if they're against one another, because they basically are. They're different categories, and we're going to find when we're done, we pick one from column A and one from column B to further delineate and describe an investment. So put those two big words on your piece of paper. Primary versus derivative. And primary are broken down into either debt or equity. Now, debt means, you know, it's something that is owed. Now, it's not what you owe, it's what is owed to you. You're playing the part of the bank. You're lending your money to someone else or some other entity, and then you're getting paid interest and a promise to repay. And so debt is funds lent to in exchange for the interest income and the promised repayment of the loan at a future given date. And what are some examples of this? Bonds. And bonds are boring, and we'll discuss bonds, but first we do sexy stocks and mutual funds. But short-term investments, savings accounts and the likes. When you put your money in a savings account, you're lending your money to the bank. Right? That's how it works. And then they promise to pay you interest, not much at these days, but they also promise to repay you the loan, the money. When you invest in ownership, in equities, you're becoming the owner of that property. You invest in a business or a property. So the primary examples of this are stocks, which are simply just corporations, folks. You're buying into a company, or a partnership, or a sole proprietorship, and if you've taken Business 120, you know what those are, Introduction to Business. Real estate assets that you invest in, you're the owner. Now, what are derivatives? You know, folks, the book goes into far too much detail in Chapter 3 on derivatives. I'm going to give you a couple, just a couple of sentences that I want you to memorize about derivatives. And we'll do that in our next presentation, so don't worry about that right now. But these are securities. These are financial investments. There's that word again. That derive their value from an underlying security or asset. Huh? What? I don't understand. Yeah, they're not the asset themselves. They derive their value from another asset. And, folks, these things are dangerous. Stay away from them. They are highly speculative. You can make a lot of money, and you can lose a lot of money, and you can do it overnight. You can lose all your money overnight. But there's a reason for the futures, certainly. We'll discuss way at the end of the semester. In my humble opinion, there's really no reason for options other than letting people gamble with their money. And, of course, we know that that's very lucrative. Not for the people who gamble, obviously. Some people in the industry, yours truly included, your humble instructor, do not classify derivatives as investments. They are tools for speculation, for gambling. We use the word speculation because we don't want to use the word gambling. That's such a crude word, but you hear speculation, you think gambling. Slide number 7. Now, investments can be either direct or indirect. And what does that mean? Well, when you have a direct investment, your name is on the investment. Your name is on the title. Your name is on the registration, as it's sometimes called. And you can do, you can buy and sell as you wish. Real estate, your name is on the title down at the county courthouse or the county admin building. Stocks and bonds, your name is on the account. And you can decide to buy or sell those investments as you wish. Whereas an indirect investment is someone else is in control of the investment. You have limited control, or more likely no control whatsoever, over the underlying investment. And the big examples of these are mutual funds and REITs. REITs are something we'll deal with at the end of the semester. They're called real estate investment trusts. You're investing in real estate, but you're not the one in charge of doing the management of the real estate. And then, to some extent, limited partnerships, which are something that most people just stay away from, folks, because it's sometimes very easy to get in, sometimes very hard to get out. And there's something we have to add to this, because people say, "What are you talking about? I'm in control of my mutual fund. I'm in control of my REIT. I'm in control of my limited partnership." Yes, you can buy your shares in the mutual fund, in the REIT, or in the limited partnership, but you can't call up the mutual fund or the REIT or the limited partnership and tell them, "You know what? I think you ought to invest in Apple." They're going to just say, "Oh, thank you very much. We'll make sure we pass that along to the people doing the investing." So you understand the difference? When you're the direct investor, you decide what you're going to own. When you invest in an indirect investment, somebody else is doing the investing on your behalf. Slide number 8. Now, we're going to talk about what is called domesticity. It's a fancy word for where is the investment based. And there's some subtlety involved here. Because there is one word that's pretty darn straightforward, and that's domestic. That means it's based inside the United States. Whereas the other word is international, or sometimes called foreign. And that means that the investment is based outside the United States. Are you with me? You understand the difference? Because global includes both domestic and international. So you need to be careful of this subtle distinction. We tend to use the word international as if it were global, right? It's international. It means it includes the United States. No. In the investing world, international, sometimes you might see overseas or foreign. That means outside the United States. But these terms are not as important as they were 50 years ago. Because as a very smart money manager once said, the world is a very small place these days economically. 65% by value of the parts in the Ford Mustang come from the United States and Canada. 90% of the parts in this Toyota Sienna, which is built in Indiana, by the way, come from the United States and Canada. So, which is the more American car, you know? I mean, how can you get more American than a Ford Mustang? Buy a Toyota Sienna. Yeah, it's gotten just outrageously topsy-turvy, folks. In fact, look at slide number 9. Look at all these brand names. Now, you know all these brand names, right? Just scan through them. Which one do you think are domestic? Which ones do you think are foreign? You can tell right off the bat. Some of them, oh yeah, I'm sure that's domestic. I'm sure that's foreign. And then others you're not so sure. But let's take a look at each one. So let's take a look at Budweiser's here. Mother Bud. I mean, how can you get more American than Budweiser? Well, actually, it's owned by a foreign company now. Some might say global company because Anheuser-Busch InBev, as it's called, InBev was, still is, a Brazilian, what's the other country? Not Bavaria. Belgian. Brazilian conglomeration of spirits and beer and wine. And they bought Budweiser, which was based in St. Louis, right? And boy, was that a big deal. When they said, you're buying Budweiser, you're going to let these foreigners take over. Well, we believe in a global economy. And yes, and so now Mother Bud is a foreign. But really, it's a global company. Exactly, it's a global company. How about Shell Oil? Yeah, they're based in Houston, right? Wrong. No. They have their roots back in an Anglo-English-Dutch Netherlands conglomeration called Royal Dutch Petroleum, right? But they're a huge company. They have huge operations in the United States. They're a country. I've heard this term before. A company that is a country unto its own. They basically own Nigeria, folks. And they're a big company, been around forever. How about Ben & Jerry's? Well, they used to be based in Vermont, but no more. They got bought by Unilever, I think it is. No, maybe not. But they're now a foreign company. Yeah, and the folks who started Ben & Jerry's are, you know, famous for their philanthropy and their progressive nature of their contributions and the like. And they were a little upset that it was purchased from abroad. But hey, you know, this is capitalism. We believe in free enterprises. And so that's something to be applauded, something to be welcome. And, you know, Ben & Jerry's is still darn pretty good ice cream, as far as I'm concerned. How about Farmers Insurance? Started in the United States, now Los Angeles, right? Many years, about 100 years. No, it's foreign now. It's owned by a Swiss company. How about ARCO? Atlantic Richfield. No, it's actually owned by British Petroleum. I don't know if you remember, but back when the spill in the Gulf of Mexico from BP, they were switching the name from ARCO, and they had underneath it a BP, British Petroleum Company, and the British Petroleum Company kept getting larger and ARCO getting smaller. But then when they had the spill, they got rid of the BP company. That disappeared. I think it's coming back. But eventually, ARCO will be replaced with British Petroleum. How about Gerber? Little Gerber baby. No, that's a foreign company now. Carnation? No, that's a foreign company. Cup of Soup? Yeah, that's foreign too. Fox Network? How can you get more American than Fox Network? I mean, if you don't believe what the Fox News says, you're obviously some kind of commie friend. No, that's actually an Australian company, believe it or not. Seagram's is a Canadian company. Aspirin is German. Vaseline is English. Friskies is now owned by the French, and so is Motel 6 and 7-Eleven. 7-Eleven started in Texas and went all around the world. In fact, they moved into Japan. And the Japanese love small stores. I mean, and 7-Eleven in Japan got so powerful that they turned around and bought the United States 7-Eleven. So it's foreign. Now, how about Volvo and... I mean, how you can't get more international, more foreign than Volvo and Saab. But actually, folks, for a couple of decades, Volvo was owned by Ford and Saab was owned by GM. But no more. They are now foreign. Volvo is owned by a Chinese company. And Saab, I think, is still owned by a small little racing firm somewhere in the Netherlands, I think. I don't know. The best one, folks, the absolute best one, folks, is Jaguar and Land Rover, the British companies that were owned by Ford for a couple of decades, but Ford sold them to Tata Motors. Tata, what are you, Tata? Who's Tata Motors? It's an India, you know, the subcontinent, Asia, not you know, Cleveland Indians, but an Indian company. I know, it's tough. I mean, think about that. The British ruled India for, I don't know, 200 years or so, maybe a little bit more. I don't remember. I'm not that keen on that. But now an Indian company has purchased and owns two of the most iconic British labels in the world, Jaguar and Land Rover. So the reality, folks, is that it's so global. It is so global. I mean, people just don't understand. We Americans, United Staters, have blinders on sometimes. We just don't want to think about what's going on outside the world, but it infects us so much. You hear about terrible things in Mexico and how we need to close the borders and build a wall. And I want to tell you that that's really, really stupid from an economic standpoint. Why? Why? Well, what I did in 2013, I'll tell you my little experiment, totally unscientific, is I crossed the border into Mexico from San Diego, which is just meaning I walked across the border with my suitcase. And I took a bus to the Tijuana airport, and then I flew, it was 2 weeks. I flew to Mazatlan for 3 days, took a bus to Puerto Vallarta, 3 days, took a bus to Guadalajara, 2 days, took a bus to Morelia for 2 days, and then wound up, took a bus to Mexico City, met some friends. We went to Cuernavaca for a night, came back to Mexico City, and I flew back to Tijuana from Mexico City, and then crossed the border back into San Diego. 2 weeks. And every time I saw an American brand advertised or for sale or, you know, a marquee somewhere, I wrote it down in my little electronic device. Now, I didn't go walking up and down the aisles of a grocery store or a pharmacy. I certainly didn't go into any businesses and all the different business-to-business commerce that goes on. How many brands do you think, American brands, I saw? How many? And you ask people and they'll say, oh, 20, 15, 30. Over 300. You know, and again, I didn't go searching for them. And this does not include all the different Disney characters and the Warner Brothers characters and Bob Esponja, all the different characters that you see that are American, all the music that you see that some listen to is American, all the sports teams that you see with T-shirts and baseball caps and the like. And you know, someday, I know people don't want to hear this, but someday the United States, Canada, and Mexico, we're going to have to join in a way somewhat similar to the European Union. And, you know, nothing's perfect. The European Union's having its problems. But in general, it's been very good economically for Europe. And it will be good for us. We're not talking anytime soon, folks. It will not happen in our lifetime. Maybe 100 years from now, maybe sooner, depending on what happens. If only because we're going to have to compete against Asia, folks. And people don't understand Mexico. They really don't understand Mexico. There's 130 million people there. And they all drink Coca-Cola. And they love Marlboro cigarettes and Ford pickup trucks. We're in this together. And you might think, oh, he's a, you know, darn liberal, bleeding heart. No, I want to make money. I want my investments to do well. Yeah. Okay. So if you want to throw slings and arrows at me, you go right ahead. But someday it's going to happen, because if not, we'll just become more and more marginalized. And again, it's not going to happen anytime soon. Don't worry about it. I like to think of Star Trek. Star Trek, in 200 years, supposedly the world has finally gotten together and said, we're going to work as one. So give us 200 years, okay? Slide number 10. Here are the 18 countries, top 18 companies according to per capita income. And you'll notice this is the industrialized world, right? United States, Canada, Europe, Western Europe, Hong Kong, Japan, Singapore. Yeah, okay. So which country do you think had the best average annual return over the past 40 years? Which country do you think which country do you think gave us the best average return over the past 40 years? Well, you might think it's the United States, but in actuality, we did pretty darn well, folks, between 1973 and 2013. But we're not the best. Sweden, Netherlands, Denmark. Wait a minute. Those are socialized countries. They have socialized medicine. Well, depending on how you define socialism, they have free markets. They have enterprises that are owned by the people, not the people of the government, not by the government, but individual private property. And it turns out that Sweden has done the best. Now look at Japan and Italy, and you think, wait a minute, what's wrong with Japan? I mean, they're at the cutting edge, folks. One of the world's largest economies. And why haven't they done as well? Well, it gets down to demographics. Exactly. Italy and Japan and Spain, these countries are losing population. Their populations are shrinking. And it's kind of hard to grow an economy when your population is shrinking. We in the United States have increased our economy and our population normally through immigration. And of course, that's become a very hot button issue these past decade or so. But we're a nation of immigrants. And so we've done pretty well. I don't think 9.8% is that bad, and we'll come back to that in the next couple of presentations, that's actually pretty darn good. But you could have done better by going outside the United States. And the stock markets in the developing world, on average, have done about 8.5 and 9%, 8.7%. Slide number 11. Now, we're going to categorize investments by the time frame, because this is very important. Before you make any investment, folks, you must know when you need the money, because that's very, very important in what investment alternatives you have available. Short term in the industry is up to a year or so. Intermediate term, 2, 3 to 5 years, and anything 5 years or more is considered long term. I tend to take a little bit longer view, 1 to 2 years. I think it's because I'm just getting older. 3 years could even be short term. 3, 5, 6, 7 could be intermediate. And I like to think of long term as 7, 10, 20 years. That's just because I'm older. You talk to Caltrans or other entities that build these long-lived structures such as freeways or dams or the like. And, 5 years to them, that's next week. a lot of it depends on what kind of entity you are. But for humans, for individuals, 1 to 2 years is short term, 2 to 5, intermediate term, and 5 or more, 7 or more. So make sure you come up with your own general guidelines, but do remember them. Do remember them so that people talk to you about the time horizons. You can explain your feelings, and then realizing that there's some difference of opinion. Slide number 12. Investments then are categorized by whether they are liquid or illiquid. Now, what does that mean? Enough beer for the week? No, not drinking liquid. Liquid means an investment can easily and quickly be converted into cash. There is a ready market to purchase the investment. Change of ownership happens quickly. And that is virtually all securities, financial investments. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, REITs, boom. You call up your broker, you go online, they're gone. Right? You call the mutual fund company, they sell the shares, send you the money. It happens that fast. Whereas illiquid investments are investments that where it may be difficult to convert into cash. The market for the investment is small, or the change of ownership happens slowly, or both. And sure, if you lower the price low enough, you'll quickly be able to sell it, but you'll take a huge discount on your investment. So what's the archetype, what's the poster child for illiquid investments? And that is real estate. Real estate is a long-term investment, in my humble opinion, and it is an illiquid investment because it might take you 3, 6, 9 months to sell your home or apartment building or whatever you have. Partnerships can also be illiquid. Limited partnerships, you might have a hard time finding somebody to take over your share of the partnership. And collectibles can be extremely illiquid. You know, you go on this one website and tells you these baseball cards are worth this much, but you go to try to sell them. Now, that's what that guy's going to sell them to you. He's not. You ask him to buy yours, he'll say, I'll give you half. You know, and you, wait a minute. So you have to be careful about illiquid investments. And then lastly, but most importantly, is the risk versus return. Risk versus return. We're going to spend an awful lot of time on this, folks. Risk is the chance that actual investment returns will differ from expected returns. Now, that's not the typical definition of risk. I mean, when people think of risk, they think of suffering harm, suffering loss, danger, right? And so when we hear the term risk, we tend to get nervous and, I don't know if I want to invest in stocks, I could lose money. But what we're going to find is it's how you deal with the risk. Do you turn it to your advantage or do you allow the risk to rule you? And that is something that we hope to get a handle on because, as I've already mentioned, I'm going to mention it again because it bears repeating, Mr. Buffett loves to say, investing is simple, but it ain't easy. The intellectual part of investing is relatively straightforward. Given enough time and the time you put in studying the material, especially in this class, because that's all we do, but it's the emotional component, where when people see their investment going down, do they panic? Do they run for the exits? That's the worst possible time. History tells us. That's the worst possible time. Those are the times we should be either just staying put, which is for most of us do because we don't have a whole lot of extra cash to employ, or putting more money in, right? So, in general, the higher the expectation of investment returns, the higher the risk level. And there's no way to get around this. We're going to deal with this in detail, folks. You want high returns, you're going to get high risk. It's that simple. You want low risk, you're going to get low returns. Do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? And the risk return spectrum, which again, don't get too upset because we're going to deal with this in general, in detail throughout the semester. We're just getting started. Is right here, the risk return spectrum. If you want low risk, the most you can expect is 3 to 5%. Well, now, right now, you're not even getting that much. But that's over the long term, folks. 3 to 5%. Moderate risk, 5 to 8%. But again, you're not getting that much now. These are different times. These are very special times where the returns are very low for low risk and moderate risk. High risk, anything above 8, 9, 10%, that's pretty high risk, folks. If you want that over the long term, you're going to have a lot of what we call volatility. And then if you're shooting for 12%, folks, that's just gambling, folks. Speculative risk. Now, these are my guidelines, and I really should back them down a little bit just because we're living in such unusual times. But you'll see other people saying, speculation is when you want to get 20%. Well, I think they're out for lunch. You know, high risk is, 15%. Wrong, in my humble opinion. But, everybody's different. And as we said, speculation is not considered investing. So if you're shooting for 12%, folks, I wish you a lot of luck. And I hope you do it. But you're going to take your lumps. Believe me. Slide number 14. Okay, so now let's pull it all together. You've got these terms all written down, security versus property, debt versus equity, direct or indirect, domestic versus foreign, short-term, intermediate-term, long-term, low, moderate, or high risk, liquid or illiquid. And now let's take a look at some types of investments. Let's take a look at some examples. Bank of America Passbook Savings Account. Well, we don't use the term passbook anymore. And some institutions, I think, still give you a little passbook. Looks like a passport. But no, most of them don't do that anymore. But still, it's a savings account. And is it a security or is it a property? Well, remember, security is a fancy word for financial investment. Right, it's not a property, folks. It's a security. It's a financial investment. Is it debt or equity? Now, you think of it as equity. No, you're wrong. You're lending your money to Bank of America. So for you, it's an asset, but it's a debt asset. And people have a hard time with that. And that's why when you go to a bank and you work in the bank, everything is topsy-turvy. Everything is turned around. The money that's on deposit is something you owe somebody else. And the loans that you made to all your clients, those are your assets. So you've actually made a loan. And if that doesn't make any sense, I want you to think about it for a few seconds, because that's how it works. You are lending your money to Bank of America. And they promise to pay you interest, not much these days, and they promise to pay you the money back. Is it direct or indirect? Well, it's direct. Why? Because when you open up an account, unless you say otherwise, your name is on the account, your name is on what's called the registration, and you have control over that account. Is it domestic or foreign? It's Bank of America. Most people don't know that Bank of America was originally called the Bank of Italy, but that was, 100 years ago, folks. Now, it's domestic. Short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term? What we're going to find is that short-term investments such as savings accounts and CDs are short-term, or at least they should be. And you'll see people who have a few a few hundred thousand dollars in savings accounts at a bank. You know what, folks? They're thinking it's long term, but they need to take business 123. They don't understand that banker is licking his chops. He's paying you 0.1% or 0.01% and lending your money out at 18% to bobos who use credit cards. Okay, so that's short term. Low, moderate, high risk? Oh, this is very low. In fact, it's backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. of A, and it's very low. Is it liquid or illiquid? Very liquid. In fact, you walk down to the Bank of America and they will give you your cash. Assuming they have enough, you ask for a lot of cash in one day, they'll kind of look at you and say, oh, can you come back tomorrow? And they're allowed to do that. They're allowed to say, give us a day, because then they have to get it to the, because they don't keep that much cash in the branches. That's all in the ATM machines. How about Nestle's? Nestle, you don't remember N-E-S-T-L-E-S, what? Well, who makes the very best? Nestle's. N-E-S-T-L-E. Nestle's. That's when I was a kid. Foods. World's largest food company. Is it a security or property? Right. You're buying a financial investment. You're buying a stock, so it's a security. Is it debt or equity? In this case, you are part owner. You're equity. A stock is equity. You own part of, now you own a teeny little part because it's the world's largest food company. Is it direct or indirect? Well, when you open the brokerage firm, unless you did something differently, it's direct. You have control over it, and you can buy and sell your shares at any time. Domestic or foreign? Nestle is based in Switzerland, but it's like Royal Dutch Petroleum. It's one of those companies that is a country unto itself. So it's a foreign investment, but really it's a global investment. Short term, intermediate term, or long term? Well, in general, folks, stocks are considered long term investments. With a stock like Nestle, you could think of it as intermediate term, but it's just good to think of stocks as long term investments. Stocks are never short term investments unless you are a speculator, unless you are a trader, and you have no intentions of holding it for the long term. In which case, good luck. Low, moderate, or high risk? Well, normally stocks should be considered high risk, in my humble opinion. But Nestle, yeah, we could throw it into the moderate category. Is it liquid or illiquid? Well, in general, folks, stocks are very liquid. There are some stocks called penny stocks where you might not be able to find somebody to buy your shares, but that's, you know, stay away from those things. They're not real companies, and we'll discuss those in detail. But in general, stocks are very liquid. Somebody wants your 100 shares of Nestle Foods. What about Southwestern Community College Proposition AA, Proposition R bonds? What are these things? Well, you see the stadium? Not bad, huh? You know, we didn't have a bake sale to build that stadium, folks, okay? We had to make some serious loans. We had to borrow some serious money. And so we went to the voters of the South Bay and said, hey, we're Southwestern Community College. We'd like to fix up the campus. Will you allow us to make a big loan? Hopefully they understood that they had to pay for it over the next 30 years from their property taxes. A lot of people don't. And so when the voters said yes, we were then able to sell bonds. We were then able to literally sell a loan, sell bonds to investors all around the world, but mostly in the United States, who lend us that money, and now we agree to pay them back interest and pay them back the principal over the next 30 years to fix up the campus. Very cool. And we'll discuss bonds in detail later on. Is it a security or property? Well, it's a security. It's a debt security. That's what a loan is. We are lending our money to Southwestern Community College, and Southwestern promises to pay us interest and pay us back the principal. It is direct in that we normally, unless we set up something different, we normally have the ability to buy and sell those bonds at any time. Somebody's going to... They're very liquid, we'll find out. People love these bonds, folks, these muni bonds. Domestic or... some people do call us Tijuana Tech, but no. There is an Instituto Tecnológico de Tijuana in Tijuana. You know, we're in the Southwestern Community College District. We're in Chula Vista. So we're still domestic. Short-term, intermediate, or long-term? Well, many people buy bonds for the long-term, but they also can be considered intermediate-term because they're far less scary, risky, volatile than stocks. So you could consider them short-term or... intermediate term or long term. Are they low, moderate, or high risk? Well, they're fairly moderate. In fact, they're pretty low, actually. I mean, unless property values in the South Bay do another 2007, 8, and 9, which doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. Someday there'll be another boom and another bust. Big bust, big boom. But no, they're fairly moderately low risk. Liquid or illiquid, or I already said so. Very liquid. People love muni bonds, so you buy muni bonds, there'll be somebody who wants to buy them. In fact, there's often not enough, you know, because people tend to buy their bonds and just hold on to them. So other people who want to buy bonds, I can't find these bonds. So somebody will buy your bonds. Now, how about a duplex in Spring Valley? You know, you rent one, you live in the other one, huh? Is that an example of? Yeah, it is. Right, it's real estate. So is it security or property? It's property. Yes, it's real property, real estate. It's attached to the ground. Is it debt or equity? Well, in this case, it's equity. You are the owner. Your name is on the title down at the county admin building. Is it direct or indirect? Well, unless you set something up differently through a lawyer and all that stuff, which you're not going to do, you're in charge. You can live in it, sell it when you want. Domestic or foreign? Yeah, well, Spring Valley. It's still the United States of America. Short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term? Well, in the 2000s, we found what happens, and it turns out badly, when people start to think of real estate as a short-term investment and flip a real estate. It's not something you want to do. It's very few people will ever get involved in it in a long-term basis. But no, real estate's a long-term investment, and it has done very well for most people who didn't buy too high and then go through foreclosure. Low, moderate, or high risk? Well, real estate is, in general, moderate, depending on the area. In the 2000s, it was very high risk, and it came back to bite thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who went through foreclosure. But no, if you have a long-term time horizon, real estate should do well for you, especially in San Diego. It is not as though it is becoming less desirable to live here. Liquid or illiquid? Right. Illiquid. Real estate should be considered a very illiquid. That doesn't mean you won't be able to sell it, folks. I mean, you will eventually, but sometimes it takes a lot longer than you thought it was going to take. In the bubble of the 2000s, you put this for sale sign up on a Thursday night, and Saturday you got five offers. So that is very unusual, folks. And that those times will come again someday. People tend to go through these cycles of fear and greed and fear and greed. But no, it's not going to happen anytime soon. How about Qualcomm? It's a stadium? No. They're a company that makes chips. No, they don't even make the chips anymore. Somebody else makes them for them. They make the systems that work for cell phones. It's called CDMA. Can't do much of anything. No, I'm sorry. Code Division Multiple Access. And if you have a Verizon phone or a Sprint phone, you are using Qualcomm technology. Yeah, exactly. And so you're buying their stock. Is that a security or property? I think you know the answer. It's security. Is it debt or equity? Stocks are equities. In fact, that's another term for them. Direct or indirect? It's direct because you put your name on the brokerage account, so you're in control of it. Domestic or foreign? Well, it's based here in San Diego, but they make more money outside the United States than they do inside the United States, so it's a global company. Short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term? Well, in general, stocks are long-term. Low, moderate, or high-risk? Well, folks, stocks in general should be considered high-risk, especially technology stocks, because who knows when the next big thing comes along and all of a sudden cell phones are obsolete. You laugh, but it's going to happen someday. You know, someday someone's going to inject the darn thing into our brains or our calves or our liver somewhere, and we'll be able to communicate. I don't know if I want to do... Anyway, liquid or illiquid? Yes, somebody wants your 50 shares, 100 shares of Qualcomm, so you call up your broker, you go online, it's gone. Now, what about the loan to Uncle Harry? All right. Every family has an Uncle Harry, right? Tio Lucas. Yeah. So you lent him money. Is that security or property? Well, it's a loan, so it's security. It's not real property. You gave him the money. He said he's going to pay you back with interest. So is that debt or equity? That's a debt security. That's a debt investment. You've lent the money to him. Direct or indirect? Yeah, it's direct, and you're in charge of it, and he's supposed to pay you back. He said he would pay you back monthly for domestic or foreign? Well, until he sends you a postcard from Aruba, he's still based in the United States. Short term, intermediate term, long, really long term, right? Low, moderate, high, how about speculative? Liquid or illiquid, you think anybody's going to want to take over your loan? No, folks, you're stuck with it. You lent him the money, you stuck with him. So, it's a bit of a joke, but no. From now on, folks, when you see something, I want you to be able to look at it from an investment point of view. A vehicle into which you place resources. wherein you will receive reasonable expectation of receiving either income, cash flows, you know, interest, dividends, rent, or capital gains, or at least it'll, you know, keep its value. All right, so now, I want you to go back and maybe listen to this again, or go back through your notes and make sure you know all the terms that we've gone through. And I want, again, to welcome you and thank you so much for joining us at Southwestern Community College. In our next presentation, we will fly a little lower. We'll go down a little lower in our introduction to investments and take a look in more detail, but it's still very high level, on the overview of investment alternatives. Are you excited? Are you? Oh, great, great, great. Because you're going to learn how to eat well or sleep well or a little bit of both. See you in our next presentation, dear students.